We're gonna do this the old way. This is Jason Kafer's former CA, or this formerly the one. It's Friday, 27th of November, and it is the day of my alchemical marriage. It is the day of my, of the end of the rest of my life as a single organism. Well, I'll still be a single organism, but I won't be single. Anyway, that's really nobody's business, but I just thought I'd set the scene for this week's podcast, which is a solitary affair, because I haven't managed to hook up with anyone else, and so I'm going to try and do it the old-fashioned way, back in the days of Aeolus Caithness and Stormy Weather, News from the Frontline, End Times, and all that stuff. It seems like a long, long time ago to me. I don't know about the rest of you out there. I have a feeling that a lot of you are probably also experiencing accelerated development, the quickening, changing perspective, rapidly mutating, transmuting, so fast that it, well, consistency is no longer really an option. It's nothing that I can be too concerned about, trying to be consistent with something that I said yesterday. I was thinking about putting up an old Stormy Weather podcast that was never used, a chat between myself and Sancho Blacklight, but when I listened back to it, I just didn't feel any connection to that guy. Myself, I mean, not Sancho. I really didn't identify with or connect to the place from which I was coming just a few short months ago. So, this is timed with a slightly new direction for myself, for Sweater, and possibly for this podcast also, which is that that of end times management. My idea, which is not a new idea to me, I mean, I've been aware of this potential for Sweater for a while now, so nothing's really changing within Sweater necessarily, although that's always changing, but in relation to this, but what's changing is the way in which I'm presenting the potential of Sweater to others, which is a place, a rehabilitation center for paranoids. Not so much to get over their paranoia as to get through it and to find ways in which to apply it in their daily lives and to build a bridge in their consciousness between the big picture and the little picture. Because, let's face it, the more that we know, the more knowledge that we have about big picture stuff, the harder it gets to really apply that knowledge. The less and less it has to do with our everyday, mundane, nitty-gritty existences. You know, what does a global conspiracy or a satanic ritual abuse or alien abductions or the Council of Foreign Relations or the Palladian Agenda or Sirius have to do with a shitty internet connection or misbehaving children or impossible mothers or one more family Christmas? They are two different reality tunnels, and that's part of the problem, I think, part of the difficulty that we experience as paranoids. Researchers, explorers, seekers, sorcerers, whatever, you name it. Those of us, we know who we are, who maybe we're congenitally different, maybe we're born with some sort of defect, some splinter in our brain that obliged us to seek out alternate perceptions that better matched our own individual perceptions of ourselves and of our environment. So, for example, when we have that splinter in our brain, that was a real world interruption there. Splinter in the brain. Well, What was I saying? That for those of us who have an alternate experience of reality, of our environment, autistic or whatever you want to call it, on the one hand we have to work quite hard to adapt our perceptions to fit with what we understand others' perceptions to be so that we can communicate. But on the other hand, at the same time, in order not to become too distorted by that adaptation to survive, we also seek out others with perspectives similar to our own. So, hence you have a community like the Alternate Perceptions Community, which I notice is now being called Alternative Research Community, a phrase which seems to have sprung up somewhat recently after I coined the phrase with Henrik. So that's always nice to see seeds that one's sown sprouting. But anyway, that community, which is a growing community, and it is a consensus unto itself. But within it, because of that, there develops a sort of dogma and a sort of conventionality that is really an imitation of the larger consensus reality that we were trying to get away from. So that was a big part of why I stopped Stormy Weather to begin with. Realizing that I was helping to build the second matrix, that I was just imitating consensus reality with the formation of a new little pocket within it that was supposed to be alternative but was actually part of a something that had already been co-opted. Not necessarily at some hidden, covert, sinister level, although that too, but just in terms of what the human intellect does, what neurotypical behavior is. It's a morphogenetic field, so everything that enters into that field ends up imitating it, even when it's apparently going against it. So, where am I going with this? Well, somebody recently said that the alternate perceptions community is a freak show, and I'm a freak show within a freak show. There's certainly some truth in that, and the same sort of the way in which consensus reality perceives the alternate perceptions community, I have a feeling that the alternate perceptions community views what I'm doing in a similar way, which is ironic. It's especially ironic because what I'm attempting to do, I suppose, what seems to be the intent behind what I'm doing, because I go on instinct to a large degree and intuition rather than planning, is actually providing perspectives or exploring perspectives that are more grounded in reality. Not in consensus reality, but reality with a capital R, dare I say it. I think it's reminding myself, practicing what I know, that sorcery is just an alternate viewpoint to oppose the ordinary interpretation of reality with, and so that we can slip between the two. And tendency with paranoid awareness is to feel that this is truth in itself rather than a way to cancel out the consensus version of truth by assembling and entering all the way into an alternate reality which is equally real and therefore equally unreal, therefore lets us see the unreality of both. So hence you have the second matrix, the necessary stage to leave the first matrix. So, anyway, I'm rambling and babbling, and I don't have any notes today. I don't have any particular direction I want this to go. I am at a turning point in my life, and I think that this is going to have a ripple down effect on what I'm doing here on the internet. And I do want Sweater, such as it is, to be successful. And I do want to continue attracting people to it, because I met some very interesting and appealing people through Sweater who I wouldn't have met otherwise. But I also feel that I've lost touch with a larger group of people out there who were fans of Stormy Weather and all the rest of it. And I guess I sort of lament that. But I'm being careful about what I say here, because I want to be clear in myself to be able to separate the baby from the bathwater, and that I don't miss the good feeling of having a following and of being a player in the community, but I miss being connected to a larger audience as a way to find out more about you all as individuals. And I feel like Sweater, well, I know that Sweater is my attempt to bring it into a more personal one-on-one connection, but I think that it's been a little off-putting and alienating to a vast majority, and so in a way it's been counterproductive. It's worked in one way, and in another way it hasn't worked. So now I'm always about building bridges, it seems. It seems to be that's what I do. I try to reconcile irreconcilable perspectives, and that's just something in my makeup. And so now I've created two perspectives, one after the other, which, well, they're certainly not irreconcilable, because they both come from the same place, but there does seem to be a gulf between them, which I'm hoping I can narrow enough for a bridge to actually be built between them. And that is what I'm doing now with Sweater, and what I was doing before Azaelus Caphus with Stormy Weather and Homo Serpens and that whole game. Because, well, sometimes when we want to move beyond an old perspective, we pull a little further away from it than we need to, just to be sure that we're clear of it. And something of this kind's been happening with me, and I've been aware of it, that it's like renouncing to a degree previous ways of understanding, communicating, perceiving, in order to clear up some room for new perspective to emerge into. And because this is all personal, this is all a personal testimony, it always has been, it can only ever be that. Well, I'm hoping I won't have to edit this thing, because I'm not going to have much time, what with getting married and the honeymoon and consummations and all that. So this is really a last minute improv that I'm just hoping will pass for a podcast and spark a little interest in my listenership that has been, I suspect, a little dampened. I'm going to read a post that's at the Outer Forum, because I've been much more active at the Outer Forum recently, and there's some interesting debates going on there, and I would like to encourage listeners to come to the Outer Forum and join it and start posting. And it's going to be a lot more activity there than at the blog, and this is also where I'm offering one-on-ones free of charge in the form of posting threads. People want to ask questions and get some guidance or orientation about personal matters, then I'll be offering it as a precursor or as a sampler for what Sweater is and what a one-on-one consultation through Skype would entail with me. Anyway, so the post. This is Invisible Jungle responding to my comment about Michael Cesarian. Which was a response to Sweaty Case asking if I was projecting something onto Michael Cesarian and why did I have a problem with him. I responded that I don't have a problem with Michael Cesarian. I love it when my competition sucks. To which Invisible Jungle responded, spoken like a true businessman. Which of course I'm not, but I am aspiring to that. To be just like my father in that one way. Perhaps the only way, the only thing about my father that I, well, perhaps not the only thing, but the most obvious thing about him and his life that seems worthy of emulating is that he was a conscientious but very successful businessman. Anyway, Invisible Jungle quotes me again, "Why I care about that is another matter." And sure, I get mildly bummed when Cesarian gets more credit and kudos for doing something in a way that's kind of lame, and if he gets invited on Red Eyes time and time again, while Aeos Kafer stays marginalised and has his emails ignored by Henrik. I be only human, massa. To which Invisible Jungle responds, "I was actually nervous when listening to your first interview. Holy crap, I hope Aeos doesn't piss Henrik off." There definitely is value in what he's doing. Simply due to the huge amount of interviews he does, he's exposed me to many interesting researchers and topics that I wouldn't have discovered otherwise. However, there is no such thing as neutral media, and Henrik definitely prefers to shine the spotlight on guests who are the most palatable for his audience. I mean, let's be honest, the first time you were on, you were essentially said that the alternate perceptions community, Red Ice's source of income, is bullshit. Of course, you phrased it much more eloquently, but that's probably what most listeners heard. I'd be curious to have that confirmed, because I didn't think that I had said that, even though I know what Invisible Jungle is talking about. I questioned it, and I questioned it in a way that was quite rigorous. The primary thing I question is whether it actually has value, which isn't quite the same as it being bullshit. Information can be true, but still worthless. The thing about Red Ice and the alternate perceptions community in general is that it is 99% belief / opinion. And just because some, maybe even many of these beliefs and opinions happen to be true, it doesn't change the fact that that's all they are, as beliefs and opinions, because the people who are communicating them aren't communicating them from a place of knowing. They don't have direct experience with these things, they're just researchers. And so they've decided that these ideas are worth something as truth, but what they're really saying is that their opinions and their beliefs are worth something, because they are. And the more people value their beliefs and opinions, the more they feel that they have value for bringing these ideas and opinions to people. So, truth really gets lost in the shuffle. Red Ice and alternate perceptions community in general is all about researching these alternate perceptions and sharing them and exchanging them and going deeper into them and forming pictures, patterns, based on circumstantial evidence, second-hand data, or third, or tenth, or ten millionth hand data. So, it's really entertainment. That's the distinction to make, is that Red Ice is no less a form of entertainment and pastime than a Hollywood movie. It's basically the same service that it's providing. The idea that this is information that is useful to us is nonsense, unless we're researchers ourselves, and then we go, I'm going to write a book about this, so I'm going to listen to this and read this book, and like I did with Homo Sapiens. All of that stuff was very useful to me as information, because it enabled me to create my own mythos and write a book that was anchored in that, and it did lead me into a certain amount of knowing. That writing the book was a process for me to assimilate all this information and digest it and shit out the bulk of it, because it had no nutritional value, but to retain those elements that I could actually corroborate with my knowing. And hopefully Homo sapiens will serve that purpose to others, that they can devour it and shit it out, and a little bit will retain that nourishes their being. But it's only of value for those who are already hooked into this paradigm, who are already hooked on knowledge and occult information. For those of you who are, then Homo sapiens is of great value, because it's an overview of all that stuff. To mistake information for truth is to mistake belief for knowing. And information only becomes knowing when we confirm it and apply it in a way that actually has direct effects on our being and on others around us. Which is why Sweater came into being, because all of this information I'd amassed, besides enabling me to write a book and create a persona that would make me feel better about myself, it was just a burden, finally. But to begin to apply it in a way that was real and practical, and that was compatible with just my everyday ordinary existence of cooking food and getting dressed and having a bath and going for walks and going shopping and picking my nose and dealing with back pains and itchy buttholes and weird family situations and self-doubt and self-loathing and just all the stuff that we all deal with every day and every minute of our lives. For that to begin to merge, and that's the stuff that we know, you see. That's what I'm trying to get to with my communication with everyone, is that this idea of gnosis being some great cosmic occult mystery. When being in what we know, which isn't synonymous with gnosis, but it's more real and more immediate than gnosis, because it's not this great big cosmic affair. Being in what we know is so simple that we miss it. I know that I'm sitting in a chair now. I know that my left hand is enfolded into my right palm. I know that my legs are crossed. I know that my eyes are closed. I know that the floor is beneath my feet. I know that outside there is frost on the ground. I know that the sky is clear and that the sun is shining. I know that my wife-to-be is working across the street. I know that if all goes well, we'll be married today. I know that I will eat today. I know that I will die someday. I know these things. I don't know that everything is an illusion. I don't know that the galactic consciousness is moving through us and going to activate us and turn this whole world upside down. I don't know that there's an alien human hybrid agenda. I don't know any of that stuff. That stuff is in the unknown, and it's moving into the known in order to become a knowing someday or not. So it's not as though that stuff needs to be thrown out completely either, but just to let it stay in the realm of the unknown and not try and turn it into belief or opinion or philosophy as a way to make our life more interesting and exciting and to relieve the pain and the pressure of our mundane existences and all our troubles and fears and woes, to stay in what we know, and for that to be enough, to be honest about what we know, and that we know that whatever little bit we do know, it is enough. It's all that we need to know. That's how the universe functions. We are given what we need to know. The information we need comes to us, and I don't mean through the internet, though there is that. Whatever you're getting from this podcast is coming to you through that medium. But that medium is just a means. It's a means for you and I to connect across space-time. And connection happens in the heart, just as knowing happens in the heart. Nothing that has any reality happens in the mind. The mind, it perceives, but it can't know. The mind conveys what it perceives to the heart, and then the heart opens and softens to that and makes it a knowing. But if that doesn't happen, if it just stays in the mind, then all it is perceptions. That's all it is. So, that was quite a detour from red ice to that. Now I could go any number of different ways from this space that I've created in my own consciousness, and perhaps in yours too. It's somewhat daunting to think that I get to decide what words come out of my mouth when I can't possibly know what is the right thing to say, ever. We don't ever know what to do at any given time from our head. The mind only perceives. If we use the mind to perceive, we take what we perceive into the heart and roll it around and let it become a knowing, then the heart knows what to do. The heart responds. It responds to what it knows, and then there's a movement of being, and that movement moves through us, and we act. We speak, we express that movement of being as a response to what is. There's not necessary this third thing of interpretation, which we overlay our mental projections, which interferes with our mental perceptions, and attempt to put our hands on whatever it is that we're perceiving and adjust it so that it's more appealing to us. When we act from that place, a place of perceiving and not a place of knowing, then we never know what to do. But we cover that up by just constantly doing and doing and doing, just trying new things. Just keep trying new things to do. Because the alternative is to let go and surrender and go into that little bit that we know that will tell us that nothing that we can do is going to change anything about any of this, whether it's an itchy butthole or whether it's a global conspiracy, really doesn't matter, except that one of these things we know, we have a knowing about, and the other we just have beliefs and opinions. And of course, there are things you can do about an itchy butthole, but not about a global conspiracy. But even with the itchy butthole, it's really just a question of being in that itchy butthole and being all the way in it and just allowing that experience to be what it is for consciousness. Because for consciousness, an itchy butthole is not the same thing as it is for us as persons with preferences for a non-itchy butthole. Just as we have preferences for a world free of global conspiracies. But that preference doesn't make any difference, because if the butthole's going to itch, it's going to itch. And yes, we can try remedies. But it may be that the itchy butthole has got nothing to do with any kind of disorder. Well, it may be telling us that we need to clean our butthole more frequently, but once we've ruled out the mundane things that our knowing will tell us are possibilities, then we look at it as a problem and we say, well, what's the solution? But that is, again, that's the way that the mind perceives and interprets. If the mind is honest, then an itchy butthole isn't a problem that needs a solution, it's just an itchy butthole. And so then to look at it as a signal that's coming to our mind from our bodies, then we could begin to question what's the meaning of this itchy butthole. And we might find out that, well, we used to have an itchy butthole quite a lot when we were adolescents, so maybe whatever's going on now is somehow hooking into that time. Maybe this is a second adolescence for me, or maybe my patterns are being triggered by something and my body is picking up on that. And then we might also consider that the kundalini sleeps in the butthole, and so an itchy butthole could have something to do with the kundalini. Not that we really have a knowing about the kundalini, but this is an example of information that could actually lead to a knowing if we can put it together with something that is more mundane and just right there in our direct experience. Then we might find, well, okay, adolescence is the time that kundalini awakens also, so, oh, well, those two things corroborate and complement each other. So, well, then maybe the itchy butthole is not a problem at all. Maybe it's just a side effect of something that's happening, and if I'm more aware of what it is that's happening, then the itchy butthole will go away, because I'll actually be opening up to what's happening, and my body won't be trying to communicate, to draw my attention to that space anymore, because my attention is now there. So that was just a random example that came up because I didn't know what to talk about next, and you got my itchy butthole. Aren't you the lucky ones? So I'm going to go back to the post now, because I started it and I like to finish what I started. Invisible Jungle quotes a long section from my previous post. A better example for your question than Caesarian would be Ike. Why do I keep using him as a whipping boy, especially when I sort of like him? I mildly regret doing that. First off, he's a convenient example of what I see as the pitfalls of the paranoid path, and the way the second matrix gets established using sincere researchers as unwitting architects of control, quote unquote. Michael Caesarian might even be a witting one, and Jones likely is. But don't tell Henry. The less conscious reason is that I'm envious of Ike and his success, even though I really honestly would not want it for myself. If I did want it, I'd still be doing stormy weather shows with Michael Caesarian, probably. So there's a part of me that still hasn't been integrated, that really believes that large-scale exposure and book sales count for something. The part that wants attention for its own sake, because Daddy didn't give it me when I needed it. Since I know that this is what drove me to reach an audience all those years, and since I also know that I covered up this driving wound with a clever rationale about waking people up to galactic consciousness, I think this knowing qualifies me, at least a little bit, to identify the same lack of straightness in others. Look at Ikey. See the expressions he makes when he speaks, the way he sniffs contemptuously, but totally unconsciously, every now and then. Here's a man holding tight to belief, because he is personally invested in being that guy, the guy who brings these beliefs to an audience as truth. One easy giveaway is when researchers repeat the same things, often word for word, on different shows. Why do they do this? To make sure their point gets across, because they believe they have a message. They also know that it's good marketing strategy. Become easily identified with the message, and you can be branded and packaged and consumed. Consumed. There's a little thing there about Neil Kramer, but I'm not going to read that on this podcast because Neil and I have been buddies and I don't want to piss him off yet. So, and I, there's the conflict. This is Invisible Jungle's response. The sad truth is that we live in a world fueled by marketing and business and branding and all that jazz. And anyone trying to make a living by sharing themselves, whether knowledge or art, has to make a decision. How far are they willing to sell out? Simply due to the system that is set up, it's pretty much impossible to make a living in a completely clean way, unless one chooses to live independently off the land by hunting and farming. In order to spread one's message, one has to play the game. You might say something like, I'm not trying to spread my message, I'm just trying to stay in my knowing. But you definitely are invested in your message. After all, you pay money just to keep this forum up, and anybody who joins Sweater does so because they see value in your worldview, experience, and advice. The alternate research community is a freak show, and you're a freak show within the freak show. I mean that in a completely venerating way. It's probably difficult enough as it is just to find the few others who are ready for your message. If marketing and branding can help you draw in more haggard souls, and if you can do it in a way that doesn't compromise your knowing, where's the harm in that? After all, the Sweater podcasts are essentially a marketing tool, ditto for the blog. Well, that's a very well put point and very fitting. That's what I was saying at the beginning of this show, isn't it? That I do wish to draw in more haggard souls. And in a way that doesn't compromise what I know. So what do I know about that? Well, that is what I've already tried to express at the beginning of this podcast. I think there is value in connecting to others. Or rather, I know there is. That's a knowing. That knowing has been strengthened throughout the last 10 years from my first publications onward. I've been allowed to see more and more clearly that the real fruit of writing for me was connecting to others. Writing, of course, is a way to communicate, and communicating is a way to connect. So I do get frustrated when I see and listen to others in this community who aren't connecting. They're not even connecting to themselves. If there's anything different about what I do with these podcasts, it's that I use them as a form of therapy. And I make no bones about that. And that makes them honest, relatively honest and relatively real compared to other podcasts that you listen to. Because I'm always exploring what I know and what I believe and what I think and what I feel through these podcasts. that's what they are for me, they're explorations. And so to then use this space that I create for explorations also for marketing, for propagating, is very tricky. I can only do it in a way that is still part of this exploration, like I'm doing now. And so I do have a tendency to sabotage myself constantly. I know that. And it's not entirely clean. There's a tendency for me to think, well, I'm not driven by ambition. I'm never going to sell out. Look, I can even abandon something when it's becoming too successful. How much of a non-sellout does that make me? But so that's not clean, because I'm doing it in a way that's compulsive. And it's not only that there's patterns that in me that drive me to be a failure. And then it's like a guy who is with a girl that he doesn't feel he's good enough for, and she's too beautiful, she's too this, she's too that, and he becomes jealous and suspicious, and he's convinced that she's going to dump him, and so presently, of course, she does dump him, because he has held the space for that to happen. He has created a self-fulfilling destiny. And so I'm a bit that way with failure. I alienate my audience so that when I lose that audience, when I begin to feel that I'm not getting the attention or the credit that I deserve, I can console myself with the fact that I deliberately alienated my audience. I can't take my own problems that seriously, any more than I can take the end of the world that seriously. It's just really not that big a deal. Personal self turns everything into a huge, humongous deal, whether it's an itchy butthole or whether it's 2012, doesn't matter. It's a big deal when we decide to make it a big deal and we invest in it. And then psychology of prior investments is the more that we invest in something, the more we have to continue investing in it, because if we admit to ourselves that it wasn't worth investing, then we've got to face up to a whole lot of lost time and energy having invested in it. So this is how a second matrix is created, that ideas become opinions, become beliefs. They're invested in, they become a system and a structure of belief that is a surrogate for truth that more and more people invest in, and then more and more bullshit is required just to maintain the edifice intact, because truth is constantly moving and shifting and changing. Perception is a two-way affair. So when we perceive, we're not just receiving, we're also transmitting. This is why being in our knowing is so essential, because if we're transmitting from a place of ignorance, then what we're doing is just adding noise to the signal. We're attempting to add elements that we consider necessary or desirable to the picture in order to fit with what we think or feel. Knowing isn't like that, because knowing, when you're in your knowing, it's always enough. No matter how small it is, it's enough, simply because you're all the way in it. That's why death is such a powerful tool, because it's a knowing that is big enough to stay in, and to, it enters into every other part of our being So whatever we think or feel, if we're in a knowing about our deaths, then what we think and feel changes. It is put into a whole new perspective. But actually one can use any knowing to do that. It's just that death is such a big one because it's universal and it's final and it's the end of everything, and so it has such resonance for us as persons. But then on the other hand, it makes it very hard to even get into a knowing about death because there's so much resistance. So it's a good and a bad thing, using death as an advisor, as for warriors, but for when we're just ordinary people, which is most of the time, using death as an advisor is, it's a momentary thing. We can't be in that knowing all day, every day. But we can be in our knowing about something all the time. And it's like being in the body. Enjoying being in the body. Knowing the parts of our body as consciousness. Being in that knowing. It's such a small thing because our bodies are always there. When we get out of our chair and go over to the door and we take off our coat and we put our coat on, we put our hat on and we put our boots on and we go out into the cold, that's all the movement of being that we just take so for granted that it's meaningless to us. But if we're in our knowing about what we're doing, then everything else goes away. There's nothing to think about, there's nothing to interpret, there's just the perception of what we're doing and the knowing that what we're doing is good. There's a goodness to it. Most of the bad stuff in our existence comes from thoughts and feelings. Maybe all of it does. There's really no badness in a knowing. It's knowledge of good and evil, not knowing of good and evil. So if you know evil, then you know good. And you know that the two polarities complement and cancel one another out. And there is just energy. There is just awareness. And there is movement. There is always movement. Everything is in flux and flow and change. So the only possibility of badness comes when things are fixed by our perception of them. Our interpretation fixes things and creates a matrix out of them. But every matrix is a womb for something to be born through. So it's only, the only problem is when we don't allow belief to serve its purpose, for a knowing to grow within and to be born from. Because belief can lead to knowing. And we can believe what we know. We can believe what we know, and then we know what we believe, and it's enough. We don't have to believe anything that we don't know. We really don't. It's a habit. That's all it is, like smoking, overeating. We can drop it just like that. The moment that we decide to drop it, it's gone. And then all that's left is what we know. And that's the beginning of living. That's when we begin to live. There is only life after death.